Blog Talk Radio.
Wine and Weights, www.possiblyrobdecker.com. Coming up next, right here on the Parker J. Cole Show. Parker J. Cole Show, and I'm so glad you are here for another episode. I am so excited talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Rob Decker, and he's going to tell us a lot about his life, his testimony, and he's going to be encouraging us with his life experiences. One thing I love about doing the show is that I get a chance to meet authentic people who have been through the trenches in many different aspects of their lives, and they come to the trenches, and they come know our Lord and our Savior, and they share the joy of that with each other and with us, with everyone they meet. And Rob was just so excited to share his testimony with us. So I'm so glad that he took time out of his busy schedule to be with us. CBN did his testimonial video as well, so you can also search online to see his testimonial video if you like. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the broadcast. If you want to talk to Rob, you certainly can by calling in at 646-668-8485, then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag PJC Show, with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Rob Decker. What's his whole thing about women, wine, and weights? Coming up next.
Has God called you to be a pastor or leader, but the men and women in your church won't let you speak because you're a female? Is the call to minister strong on your life, but you hesitate because you think the Bible tells women to be silent in the church? I'm Jory Micah, and I am here to tell you, sister, that together we can break the glass steeple. I fight and advocate for gender equality in the church, and there are others with me who are holding up the banner. Subscribe to my blog at joryimicah.com for interviews, commentary, and uplifting words to give you the motivation to answer the call to ministry. Together, we can break the glass steeple and inspire all of God's children, men and women alike, answer the call to ministry.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers only to be told your themes are a bit too religious. We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Parker J. Cole Show on WPJC 104.5. So glad you're here with me. We are talking today to Rob Decker, and his testimony is titled Women, Wine, and Weights, WWW, and doesn't mean World Wide Web. And so I'm really excited to talk to Rob because he was just so filled with the desire to share his testimony. And like I said before the break, love it when we have guests who are authentic, who are willing to share what God has done for them what trenches he has brought them out of and how he has changed their lives. CBN did a video of his testimonial that you can find out online, and Rob will tell you a little more about that. But before we get into that, I want to introduce Rob Decker to you. Rob, how are you doing today?
I am absolutely splendid. I am doing really well, and I just want to thank you for inviting me on your show and allowing me to share my story.
I'm so glad that we connected. I was looking for testimonials because I want to showcase more testimonials, because I think sometimes when people are going through difficult times, they may feel as if I'm the only one who has ever been here, or I'm the only one going through this trauma, whatever it is. And when we share our testimonies, what God has done for us, we can be comforted by the fact that, guess what, I'm not alone. And if God was with him, then he'll be with me too. Do you think that's the kind of joy that we receive when we have the opportunity to tell people what God has done for us? What's your opinion about that, Rob?
Absolutely. You know, it's why I love sharing my testimony and what God's done in my life, because I know that it's going to make a difference in somebody's life. I know that through my story and trials and tribulations and where I am today, you know, it could give someone a glimmer of hope. I know a lot of times, you know, we'll go to church and we'll listen to a pastor, and we kind of even know the pastor. We know his background, and not to say it's a good or bad thing, but, you know, sometimes it's hard to relate to somebody that hasn't been through it. And, you know, for me, I've been through it. And I really believe that it gives people a dose of hope when they hear something like that. Like, you know, I've been through that, or I'm going through that. And if God can do that for him, why can't he do it for me? You know?
I like how you said that. If God can't do it for him, why can't he do it for me? Sometimes we're filled with doubt. I know from my back, I've been
for
there
sure.
Probably more than once. I've been there more than once. And I'm always encouraged when I hear, well, you know what, sister? This happened. I go, whoa. Well, let me stop complaining, first of all. That's what I'll do. Let me stop
complaining. Right. It's not that bad, right?
Right. So I really want people to get to know you, Ralph. So go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words. I know we kind of hinted at it. I know you have something to do with fitness and faith. And for our listeners out there listening, looking at the link, you see these gorgeous pictures of Roderick. He's a very handsome man, quite fit. And so I want to talk about that, but go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that. Those are great compliments. You know, I'm originally from Northern California. Right now I reside in Southern California. I grew up in a very interesting household where I'll give you a little bit of background on my parents. So my father was never around. My father was the guy that I guess he contributed to those good looks and the athletic prowess, right? Like, I'll take that DNA from him, right? Like,
yeah.
Mom wasn't much of an athlete, so I'll put it on him. So when I refer to my father, I'm going to refer to the gentleman who raised me. So if I talk about him at all, that's who I'm talking about. My mother, she came from a really broken home, because I really believe it starts way before me. I believe in generational curses. I believe in things being passed down from generation to generation, and things that, you know, we've learned throughout passing it down. So my mom, she grew up in a household where she was the oldest. Her mom was in an abusive relationship with my grandpa, and, you know, there's always drugs and alcohol and all that kind of stuff. My mom was raped and beaten when she was really young, and she was told that she was never going to have kids, and she got pregnant with me, and she was encouraged to abort me. So in a sense, it's like from the very beginning, you know, the enemy wanted to come for me. He wanted to come for my life. He wanted to strip it. And my mom refused that. Like, she wasn't going to allow that to go down. She, you know, being who she was and experienced what she experienced, like, she wanted somebody in her life that was going to love her and something that she could love too. And so that's kind of what I was brought up in. That's what I was born into. You know, I think it was about 6 months into my existence here, she met my stepfather. They were at the beach, and she was pushing me in a stroller, and, you know, they started talking, and they developed a relationship, and then came my sister. as we were growing up, my father's family never really accepted me. At least his mother didn't accept me. I remember coming home from school one day. This is fifth grade graduation. And I had a certificate that had his last name on it. Well, my grandma was like, you know, he's not one of us. He that's not his name. And so you must give him. So, you know, I'm getting black sheep right out the gate. Like, you know, I'm not included in these things. So my mom gave me her maiden name, which actually between my mom, my biological father and my, you know, and my father, it's definitely the name I would have chose anyway, if I had a choice. Mm-hmm. So I'm cool with it.
Right.
As time goes on, you know, it's my sister and I, and, you know, my sister gets treated different than myself. You know, I wasn't my dad's real kid. So, you know, over time, like those things are happening throughout our childhood. And, you know, I start getting in trouble. I start acting out, you know, I stop following the rules. You know, I fell in love at a young age with baseball, and it just seemed like every time I tried to pursue the sport or I wanted to do something, like I wasn't a good enough kid to play, or, you know, I didn't work my way forward. And it's just like, I had a lot of that stuff stripped in my life. So, you know, as I got into high school, you know, I really started looking for attention. However, though, you know, it's funny because once I got to high school, my looks changed. I was kind of like a closed off kid through middle school. But like I morphed, like I blossomed, and I started getting all these attention from these girls. I don't know if that was like a good thing, but I started getting a ridiculous amount of attention, and I maximized that attention, right? Like I abused that attention, right? I was just like, somebody likes me and I'm good. Like, you know, you're finally getting that attention you want. You know, and then you're around other high school kids, and, you know, then you start dabbling in the alcohol, and then, you know, the alcohol turns into the marijuana, and then, you know, you're going home and it's straight chaos at home. And, you know, I'm watching the way my dad treats my mom, and, you know, the verbal stuff, the drugs, the alcohol, like, you know, all this stuff is going on. You know, and it got to a point when I was in high school that my dad actually brought his girlfriend home while he was married to my mom. Right.
Whoa.
And my mom was sleeping off like a 3-day bender. You know, she had been so hooked on the dope, and I remember getting into a physical altercation with my dad. You know, I remember, you know, we went toe to toe. You know, I was in my boxers and he was fully clothed, and we went toe to toe. And so there was a lot of aggression in my household, and I couldn't beat my dad. My dad was a military guy. He was a strong guy. You know, he fought in the military. That's what he did. Like he boxed, you know, so he was a skilled, he's a skilled fighter. Right. So I went toe to toe with a grown man, and I didn't catch the W on that one. I definitely didn't get the win on that one. it was my first major loss, you know, and I didn't plan on losing after that. So, but I took that to the streets, you know, I took that to the streets with the fighting and, you know, this new relationship with women, like I was constantly hanging out with different girls and, drinking more alcohol, and, you know, all that stuff starts to stockpile. You know, you continue to do it. Like, you can't drink enough, you can't take enough drugs. You know, and our whole family just fell apart. And, you know, I started getting in all sorts of legal trouble, and, you know, I started stealing and selling drugs and fighting all the time. And this just kept going on and on throughout my 20s. So,
well, let me ask you this, Rob. Let me interrupt real quick, because you bring something up that I kind of want to touch base on, if you don't mind. You mentioned how earlier, you know, generational curses, and for a very long time, and I've mentioned this before on the show, for a very long time, I used to think that generational curses was just an excuse for not taking accountability for your actions. I used to think that. And I still, sometimes I still do, because sometimes those things are just us, you know. And
for sure.
Sometimes you can't blame any curse. That's just us. That's our weakness, our temptation, whatever you want to call it. But when you think about that, I see how you notice how your grandmother was abused, and then your mother was abused, and then that abuse is coming there. So there really is evidence for generational curses. And that, and then how you said how you were encouraged to be, how people encouraged your mom to abort you, you know. And I always I find it very interesting that to be stopped, they want you killed. But look where you are. Is it because it was known that you would be here right now sharing your testimony. You know what I mean, Rob? It's because that if we stop them in their tracks, look at the impact they can make in the world. Even if it's their small sphere of influence, even a large sphere of influence, even just the influence of one person who becomes a major influence. I think about the story of Billy Graham where he did a revival and only one person, this is the story, I don't know if it's true or not, but this is what I heard.
Right.
He did a revival. And only one person came to Christ, and he was like, well, that wasn't successful. And according to what I know, it turned out to be the guy who created Focus on the Family. You know, that's what I heard.
Right, right.
Some major thing. You know, so how important is it for when we are in these difficult situations to not think in the present? How would you address that? Because, you know, here she is with a child that she probably before, and everyone's saying get rid of it, but she didn't. But other people don't always have that strength of character. How would you encourage people who are dealing with a difficult situation to not think or be cognizant of the future even? What's your thoughts? I hope I'm saying it right, Rob.
Well,
I want to make sure I
well,
that right.
You know, I many kudos to my mother for keeping me here. She's an amazing woman, and I appreciate her, and I love her very much. And, you know, it's you know, the easy way out isn't always the right decision. And that would have been the easy way out for her, right? You know, how was she going to take care of this kid? And, but you know what, like, for whatever it's worth, like my mom must've had this inkling of hope or whatever it was that God put on her heart. I believe that even though she may have not actively been walking with him, you know, there was definitely a God moment that she had. You know, you just don't want to. You know, I know people that have aborted and their children. And, you know, not only does that, could that psychologically harm a woman down the road, but it you're also stripping the world of something potentially amazing, right? You don't know what that individual is going to become, you know? So, you know, for me, if I'm even answering your question, right, you know, it's I think you have to trust and hope. You have to trust and hope and you know, keep pressing through those moments in which people are pushing you to make an unsavory decision, you know, because I think that with our conscience, like I believe that we know what's right and we know what's wrong. And like I said, it's the easy choice isn't always the right choice. You know, that right choice tends to be a little bit harder sometimes.
I definitely
and I hope
agree
I answered
with
that
you
properly.
Here. Oh, you did. And I am going to take that quote you just said, that the easy way out is not always the wisest decision. That was the quote that you just said. And I really like that because it helps us let us know that just because it's easy doesn't mean it's always right. You know, sometimes, and
right.
I know this for a fact, you know, putting, you know, eating a cookie and saying, I'll get on my diet later.
Wow. Yeah. Welcome to why I have job security, right? This is why I have job security, because people can't put the cookies down. Thank you. Thank
I
you,
know.
Everybody that likes cookies.
Well, I'm glad because, you know, everyone's temptation isn't the same, you know. Like for me, you can, for me, to be quite frank, you would never be able to tempt me with alcohol per se. You never be able to tempt me with alcohol because
right.
That's just not my temptation. But if you put
right.
Cookie in front of me, I actually put it on Facebook last night. For some reason, I have no idea why. I was thinking of the sweet princess cake that I saw on a
right.
show. And I actually looked at pictures of it online for like 5 minutes.
I saw that
why
picture,
am I looking
yeah.
at this? I have to go to bed. And so, so everyone's temptations are different. We have to be mindful of that.
Right.
And so we're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. When we come back, we'll be going more into Rob's testimony titled Wine and Wait. He kind of gave us a little bit of his background, how, you know, this generational curse from his grandmother to his mom and is on the helm. And, you know, how the devil tried to stop him from being alive. But thanks be to God, the Lord used his mother to keep him going forward. One quote that Rob said that I really, really liked, I think I'm going to put on my wall somewhere in my office, is the easy way is not always the right decision. So if you want to weigh in and talk to Rob, you certainly can by calling in at 646-668-8485, then press that 1 to be live on air. Or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag PJC Show, with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We will be right back.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then AuthorShout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at AuthorShout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by AuthorShout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Hi, friends. I'm Dr. Mike Spaulding, inviting you to listen to great Bible teaching on the Transforming Word radio show and podcast. All shows are available on iTunes and Stitcher. Search for the Transforming Word and subscribe for notification of new shows. You may also listen to every episode from my website, www.thetransformingword.com. In addition to The Transforming Word, I want to make you aware of my interview, news, and opinion show, Soaring Eagle Radio. If you're interested in engaging conversations related to a variety of topics not covered by typical news media, then check out Soaring Eagle Radio. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher, and you may listen to every episode on my website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. For more information on my ministries, please email me, Pastor Mike at cclohio.com. Again, that's Pastor Mike at cclohio.com. Thank you for listening to these shows, and please leave me a note when you do. God bless you today.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Parker J. Cole Show right here on WPJC 104.5. We are talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Rob Decker. He is telling us about his testimony titled Women, Wine, and Weight. And we, before the break, kind of got into his back history. He talked about how his grandmother had been in a broken home, his mother had grown up in a broken home, and then he himself had grown up in a broken home. And we see this thread of generational curse through the family. And I want to thank Rob so much for being transparent and sharing his story with us, because as he grew up, he was searching for attention, searching for someone to care about him. And when he became a young man, he hit, I guess, puberty, and he became handsome, as you can tell from his pictures on the link here. Rob is a very handsome guy. And so we want to, so he used that, as he said, to his advantage. I mean, you know, hey, if you like it, I got more for you, right, Rob? So
I was pimping myself out.
I know, right? But I enjoy that because, you know, you're showing that, hey, this is the thread that's going on in my life. And then I'm not completely abhorrent, you know, because not like you're, you know, hideous or anything. You're not completely abhorrent. And that helps with other people, too.
Right.
And so you're going through life, you know, in your 20s, and you're just searching, you're searching. You got into alcohol and drugs and legal activity because you're looking for attention. And that's where we left off at before the break. Now tell us what's going on as this went through your 20s.
Oh, so back into my 20s, like I was actually, you know, I'm not going to say it was a complete disaster in the sense of like in that process from, I think it was when I got into high school, a couple my best friend and his cousin became my family. And, and now I get two best friends out of that situation because I have both of them in my life. But you know, they looked after me throughout my teens and my 20s, as much as they could look out after a guy who was kind of on his own mission. Right. So, so, throughout my 20s, I was still spending time with my, this family and they were still taking good care of me. So, you know, I never want to like eliminate them from the equation and how good they were for me and to me, because I love my buddy's family. But you know, when you're in this position, especially, you know, after years of thinking a certain way and doing so many things and just burying yourself in drugs and alcohol, it really all becomes about you, right? It's really isolating in your mind, and it's a war zone in there. And so, you know, as through my 20s were going, you know, I was constantly, you know, drunk and high and partying. And I mean, it was to the point, like, you know, we were going to clubs. There was something Monday, and then there was something Tuesday, and wingy Wednesdays, and thirsty Thursdays, and it's Friday, right? Like, we were just looking for stuff to do all the time. And, you know, you were just constantly in that arena. And, you know, because of my nature of being pretty outgoing, I had the ability to make friends And I had access to get to the front line of a lot of bars and clubs and get free drinks and stuff like that. Like, you almost become a superstar in a sense in that environment. People start taking, that's where I started finding a lot of my worth too. Well, you know, the ladies loved you, and all the dudes wanted to be a part of what you were doing, and you had your big circle of friends, and, you know, but that stuff started really wearing down on me, and I continued to get into these relationships. And there was, you know, relationships in which, you know, there were some really good people involved, and it just wasn't crazy enough for me. And you know, I was nuts, and, you know, I ruined those relationships. And then I get into these abusive relationships, and sometimes they became physical and very verbal and emotional. And it was just, it's just a horrible show, you know. And the thing is when you put yourself in those situations, you kind of get used to one type of chaotic environment, right? And the only way it's stimulating is as if it becomes more chaotic. And that's kind of what I kept doing to myself. I kept putting myself in much more chaotic situations. With the fitness part of all of it, you know, throughout this whole process, the only thing real positive I was doing for myself since I was a teenager was working out. Working out was my thing. I enjoyed, you know, with all the pain and the hurt and the anger in my life, like, it was a good avenue, right? It's something that I could vent to. And I took onto it and made it a lifestyle for me. So I had this balance of drugs and alcohol and partying and the fitness. The fitness made me look like I was healthy for the most part. And then, you know, then I got to go bury myself with all the other stuff. So up into my 20s, it was things were really falling off for me. I was getting DUIs. I was taking anger management classes, losing my jobs. And we're going to have more of a Christ moment now where I had a buddy that I worked with who always talked to me about the Lord. And I was like, dude, that's your thing. Keep it to yourself. It's cool. That's what you believe, man. You know, but he was planting seeds, which is super cool. After all this stuff really started going down and things really started going downhill quickly, my buddy had asked me if I wanted to give my life to God, whatever that meant. And I'm like, sure. I wasn't doing anything with my life. I was not working. I was partying all the time. I didn't have my license, nothing was going on for me outside of lifting weights. And he took me to a Bible study with him and some buddies, and they prayed over me. And the crazy thing about that prayer in that moment was I was in an air-conditioned room, and I started shaking. I had nothing to be nervous about, but I started shaking, and I started sweating in this air-conditioned room, and it really tripped me out. And at about this time, I had just recently broken up with this young lady. We were just really in a really, really bad place. And it's kind of what pushed me into the God direction, because I'm just like, I just can't get a hold on anything. And shortly after that, she walked back into my life. And that's kind of when I turned my back on the Lord and everything that I was trying to do through this Bible study and this new men's ministry and these new friendships that I had. And I jumped back into whatever she was into. And during our breakup, this young lady, she started getting into escorting. Someone had turned her on into, someone had turned her on into making money, using her body. And for me, because I cared about her so much, I was just like, you know, this kind of stuff has to stop. Like, this isn't good for you in the long run. And, you know, I'm over here giving advice. The guy that drinks, does coke, and smokes weed, and, you know, has no job or no license, right? Who am I? Who am I to really?
Someone who cares.
I cared. And so we started seeing each other again, and she went on this little last hoorah to Hawaii with one of these guys, and she was calling me from Hawaii, and she was telling me how this guy was, she was sending me pictures of her with black eyes and how he was forcing himself on her. And she was really apologetic for a lot of stuff that we had gone through in our relationship. And she wanted to make it work when we got back. So she came and picked me up from my buddy's house one day, and we went back to her house, and we stopped at the liquor store and bought some alcohol. We started drinking, and we got into a conversation, and things were about to get intimate. And I couldn't, because of the stuff that she had been through, and plus my own personal stuff, It just wasn't a situation that was feasible at the time, and it just didn't make sense to me. And so we kind of like argued about it, and I just went downstairs to you know, sleep, just forget it, you know, whatever. And this is when there was a huge banging at the door, and I hear, you know, open up, it's the police, we know you're in there. And the young lady comes down, and she looks at me and asks her what's going on. And she told me that she had called the cops, and she had told them that I tried to kill her and I tried to rape her. And
wow.
In that moment, in that moment, it was over for me. I just didn't want to be
here
anymore.
Take your time, Ralph.
Yeah, for sure. I just didn't want to be here anymore. I think, you know, I always was kind of on this like, my life is going to end short anyway. Like the drugs and the alcohol, like I was damaging myself knowing that I wasn't going to be here for a long time because there was no hope for me in my future. I wasn't thinking like seriously about marriage and kids and having a family and a career and all that. It's just not something that was on my mind. It's not, you know, it's more about partying and having fun and you know, getting through the day or whatever it was. And, you know, I just remember in that moment, it was like the perfect storm of events. It was like I wasn't even scared. I was not scared to take my life. I was not scared to jump out that window. I just didn't. It was just like, this is it. Like, this is that moment. And I took advantage of that moment. I ran headfirst out of a closed window. We were in a three-story loft in Northern California, so it was probably like a 35-foot drop or something like that with concrete at the bottom. And yeah, if you watch the CBN video or even on my website, like I'm going to post the actual window that I jumped out of. We actually, my buddies and I, went back a couple years after the fact, and we went to the same place and we videotaped the window I jumped out of and how far the fall was. So people would get a good idea of what that looked like. But, you know, I ended up jumping headfirst out of that window. And, you know, my thought was break the neck. Like that's all I care to do is just break the neck, end it all. Boom. It's over. It's done with. We're good. And there was a different plan because, as I jumped out that window, my foot hit an awning on the way out, and it changed my fall, and I ended up breaking or, like, completely shattering my left arm. I mean, I destroyed this thing. It was in pieces. Broke my lower back. Yeah, I broke my – well, you know, I think at some level your body tries to save itself, even though your thought process isn't to save itself, you know. I put my arm down, and it blew, you know, crushed that arm, broke my right wrist, collapsed my left lung. My L2, which is a huge vertebrae in your lower back, it provides stability above the hip. I completely severed that thing in half without snapping a cord somehow, some way. And I remember waking up and looking out a broken window, and it was dark outside, and I could barely breathe. And I look at that window, and I'm like, God, why? Like, why would you let me live? And I just remember the chaos. I remember the chaos of the ambulance coming and hearing all the noises and the talking and them trying to get me on the gurney and the ambulance ride and just the immense amount of pain I was in. And I couldn't move my lower body at all. My whole left side was shut down, the left side of my body. I was in excruciating pain, and I didn't understand how I could even survive such a thing. And with the preceding days, I was sitting in the hospital bed, and there were so many different thoughts running through my head. You know, the biggest one was like, God, why'd you let me live? Like that was like the biggest one. But you know, now I'm fighting rape and murder charges because, you know, those police, they had a job to do, and they came in the next day and they're like, Mr. Decker, you're under arrest for rape and rape and attempted murder. Those were the charges. I'm pretty sure I still have the police report somewhere. So, you know, so I'm facing rape and murder charges and never walking again, right? Because I'm and I'm done. The cops shackled me to the bed. Like I'm immobile. I'm not going anywhere. But they handcuffed me to the bed and throw a cop in the room and give me 24-hour surveillance. You know, I had to worry about hospital bills and my freedom and, you know, my walking again and the quality of my life when I do. And, you know, this young, she was a young black woman. And, you know, my thought was like, if I go to prison, being a good looking white guy for raping a young black woman, what does that do for me? Right.
Yeah.
Like I've seen that on TV, right? Like I get that. Mm-hmm. I've watched those movies, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I understand the hate and the racism that goes on in prison, right? But these are the kind of thoughts that you have running through your head. And God showed up. You know, the Lord showed up in a major way.
Well,
I
let me
remember
stop
laying
you real
there.
Quick, Rob,
yeah.
let me stop
yeah.
you real quick because
yeah.
There's a lot going on here and in this story, and there's a lot that you're talking about here, but you're at a low point here. You know, you just tried to commit suicide. You've been accused of rape and attempted murder, and for some reason, God won't let it in for you. He won't let it in. It was started when you were a child, and it started again, you know, by your own hands, and he won't let it in for you. And so I want you to use this dark period here
mm-hmm.
and give us just a nugget of gold here. Because I know you're going to continue the story, I know, but just give us a nugget of gold here to our listeners out there listening. They're in a dark place. And he's like, God, why won't you just let me speak to them really quickly?
Oh, for sure. Well, you know, my revelation was that he had much greater plans for me. I mean, that's simple. Like, you know, that's the peace he gave me, right? You know, you're here for something much greater. And it was much greater than anything I could fathom. You know, it's interesting because, you know, through growing up and through our experiences, like we're led to believe like this is the kind of life we're going to live or this is what's going to happen. People go to school and get a degree in something like this is what I'm going to do for my future. Like, it's so crazy. You know, it's not like that all the time. You know, it's not like that most of the time, to be honest with you. You know, because of the situation that I was in, you know, there was no hope for my future. At least I didn't think there was a hope for my future. And what I believe God was going to show me was just like, I'm going to carry you through this, right? We've all seen the footprints, right? That's legit. Mm-hmm. Like he does that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had something greater that I could have ever created for myself or ever imagined for myself, because you can only imagine so much when you've been through so much, right? You very limited. You know, like that future was very limited in my mind. And so, you know, a lot of times when you start to submit your life to him and give it to him, like he has much greater plan. I mean, whatever he puts on his hand on, you know, powerful things can happen. You know, today, even talking to you today was not something mm-hmm. that I ever thought I would have done 10 years ago, 5 years, a year ago. You know, these are mm-hmm. doors that he has opened. So, you know, he's actually creating this amazing life for me. You know, I'm just walking the walk. I'm just kind of going with. I'm like, hey, you know what? Thanks for not allowing me to have to overthink this. You have this, right? Like, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that he has a greater plan for our life. So, you know, in those darkest moments, it's just knowing that if you put your trust in him, as small as a mustard seed, right? Like, that's him. You know, he'll take that and he'll work with that and through experience. And a lot of times, you know, that process is painful and tiring, but, you know, he's not going to leave or forsake you, right? And when you're weary and when you're weak, like, he's got you, right? Like, that's where his strength shines, is when you're extremely weak. And a lot of times I just had to be in a place of weakness and I had to depend on him a lot. And throughout that, it taught me so much and built so much character and it really developed my relationship with him. So I think in those darkest moments, sometimes what happens to us to get to those really dark moments is him eliminating all the trash in our life and be like, okay, this is me and you. This is what we're going to do together. And so sometimes those dark moments are those moments where he's that glimmer of light, and you just got to go to that, and he'll continue to build from there.
And we do have a caller calling in. Caller, we're going to get to you in just a moment. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. And if you want to weigh in on our topic, you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air. We're going to take a really quick break. When we come back, we'll be hearing from our caller, and then we're going to continue this wonderful testimony of Rob Decker. We've entitled Women, Wine, and Weight, so I wonder what the W's will be after you finish hearing it. Call in again at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1. We'll be right back after these messages.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Question: if you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer: no. If you were a celebrity, or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of a million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Parker J. Cole Show on WPJC 104.5. I have been just inspired, moved, and just really invigorated by Rob Decker's testimony. We've entitled it Women, Wine, and Weights, but he is telling us the story of how God brought him through. And Rob, once again, thank you so much for being with us on the show. We do have a caller calling in. We have Rose calling in from Macomb, Michigan. Rose, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Did you have a question or comment for our guest?
First of all, I'd like to say thank you for being so brave as to share your story, Rob. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely, Rose.
And I won't keep you long. I'd like to, when I finish asking, I'd like to hang up and just listen. But what I wanted to say was, did you ever run across other people in your, as the Lord was healing you, that went through the same things that you've gone through or similar, and they too were brought out? Have you met a lot other people like that? Because the emotions that can run through you when you go through these difficult times, especially during childhood, I know about myself. But I'm saying like this. The one thing I want to say, there was one common denominator, is that we went to a Bible-believing, Bible-teaching church. It took a long time for the Lord to get hold of me. And I didn't meet anybody, but I'm asking, did you meet anybody along the way to help in this recovery process and see where you are now?
You know, I wouldn't say there was anything or anybody that had a similar story as mine. I mean, I grew up with a guy who, you know, his mom was very similar to my mom, and he grew up in a similar household. But he made different choices than I made. I do have a brother in Christ who, and a few of them, but there's one that I'm extremely close with. And, you know, he was always there for me. And everything he ever spoke on to me and talked to me about, there was always a biblical view on it. And it was just enlightening because he was able to guide me with everything that was already provided in the Word, the things that I didn't understand, like, he brought that to light for me. The Lord used him mightily and all that. So, you know, I've had some pretty powerful and mighty people in my corner that were praying for me, guiding me, helping me, showing up for me. Even friends that aren't, I would say that they're not walking with the Lord, like, the Lord used them mightily to kind of take me from place to place. And I hope that answers your question, because I'm not sure if I really met anyone who had such a traumatic experience to say. Well, and I hope no one has those types of traumatic experiences, because, you know, it's quite a traumatic experience, right?
Rose, did that answer your question, or did you?
Are you there?
Hi, Rose, can you hear? Yeah. Did that answer your question?
He answered it. You did answer it, and I appreciate that. You did answer it. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you should meet somebody. I just wondered, did you meet somebody? And you did answer it, and what kind of an impact they had on you in your real to recovery?
Right.
That was the biggest
thing. Well, that person that was really there, like I said, a lot of people were there, but, you know, one in particular, because he shares the same faith as myself, was just really like, you know, and to this day, you know, he's that guy. He's like that spiritual, he's a little bit younger than me, but he's like my spiritual big brother.
All right.
So, yeah.
Amen.
Thank you.
Rose, thank you so much for calling into the show and asking your question. And you still have an opportunity to call in and ask a question or weigh in by calling in at 646-668-8485. Then press that 1. We'll be glad to hear from you. You know, Rob, so I interrupted us because we had a caller and we wanted to make sure that we give callers the opportunity to speak with you. The other thing, too, is that you are at a very low point. And I know here you are, like I said before the break, here you are. You try to attempt suicide. You jumped out of a window, smashed your arm. The police come in, chain you to a bed. You're not going anywhere. And then you're like, God, why? Yeah, I mean, this is where you are. This is it. And then you gave us some words of encouragement that, hey, I have been there, because you've been on the other side of dark. And so go ahead and tell us what happens as you're immobile by lies, by pain, by just questions of life. What happens?
Right. Well, this is where I had a very, very, very powerful God moment. And, you know, I wish that everyone could experience what I experienced without experience, like the pain part of it. But, you know, the Lord speaks to us all a little bit different, and he reaches us different. And I was laying in the hospital bed, and I was asking the Lord why, you know, because I'm trying to make sense of all this with everything I'm up against. You know, all of a sudden, and if you've ever spent time in a hospital bed or in a hospital, there's lights, there's nurses, there's people, there's chaos, there's people coming in out of the room, like there's stuff on the intercom all the time, like you're listening to the machines that are trying to help you, like, give me oxygen and you know, you can hear your heart rate, like all of it. It's just chaos, right? And all of a sudden, everything gets really quiet. And everything gets really peaceful. And I'm like, I'm an immense power. No matter how much medication they have me on, I'm on like the drip, the morphine drip.
Yeah.
I'm on one of those, and they're feeding me pills. And like, so, and I'm still feeling a lot of pain. Well, in a moment, all of a sudden there's this clarity and this peace that just came over me. And it started like, at the top of my head, and it just kind of flowed down all the way to the bottom of my feet. And all of a sudden, there were no lights, there were no sound, there was no pain, and there was a small, still voice. And if anyone's ever heard it, it's like it's in your head, but it's very peaceful but clear voice. And I couldn't have made this stuff up. Like, this voice told me that the charges will be dropped, your bills will be paid, and you will walk again. And I doze off into this rest, and I have this vision of playing soccer outdoors. And I wasn't a soccer player, so that came to fruition way later. But then, you know, I wake up when I wake up, and the lights are back on, the chaos, the cough is still there, like all this craziness. But for a moment, I had no pain, and all of a sudden, I had this overwhelming confidence that everything was going to be okay. Not that it was going to be easy, but that it was going to be okay. While I was sitting in the hospital bed, was grilling me pretty hard. He was giving me a pretty hard time. He just didn't want to be there. I get it. You know, he'd rather be hitting the streets and doing his thing. Like, he's sitting there watching this disabled guy, right? And he's reading a police report that's accusing me of certain things, and he's giving me a hard time. And, you know, I break down and I start crying, and the nurses are coming in and telling me to calm down. And, you know, I told the officer, you know, I've made a lot of bad choices in my life, but that's just not one of those, right? That's just not something I would ever, ever do. It's just not who I am at all. And she walks in. She walks in. The cop looks up, and he goes, wow, this makes no sense at all. And within a few days, the police come into the bedroom, and the charges are dropped. Whatever happened is whatever happened. But that was the first. That was the first of whatever was spoke to me. And I was just like, what? You know, I was shocked, but I wasn't. Like, because I heard something told me not to be too shocked by it. But still, it happened. A week later, after the doctors had told me I was never going to walk again, and I had another surgery. And I was able to get up, and I was able to drag my left foot. I couldn't walk, but I could drag my left foot. So here I am, like, not able to sit up in my bed to be able to drag my foot. Like, the walking again is very feasible, right? Like, that's very, very feasible if I can at least drag my foot. And so that happened as well. And then, you know, I remember them showing me my first bill. It was like $834,000 or something like that. It was a lot of money. And something just, you know, and that voice that had spoke to me, you know, just kind of kept me cool with it. Like, you know, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. When it was all said and done, it was like $2 million worth of surgeries and hospital stays and physical therapy and pain medication and all that stuff. So, but I remember seeing the look on my mom's face when they said I was never going to walk again. It broke her pretty bad. And my mom and I weren't in a very great place as it is. We had a pretty battered relationship too. And it was nice to try to get up out of the bed before they performed that second surgery on me. Because at least I was able to, you know, with the courage of God, be able to get up on my toes and to be able to try to stand up for her. But yeah, I started to try to walk again, and that process was really hard for me. The hospital eventually kicked me out. Like, you know, they didn't want me there anymore. I guess they felt like there was nothing else that they could do for me. And I spent a month and a half there, and they sent me home to my mom. And, you know, my mom's house was very challenging because my mom, you remember, she's had her own junk. She had her own stuff. And now she sees her firstborn all broken and beaten and, you know, and I'm sure a part of my mom feels responsible for the way we were raised and the things that had happened. And, you know, I'm sure she questioned a lot of things of herself, right? And I just remember my mom walking in one day, like, while I'm trying to heal in her home, and just looking at my mom and, like, having this overwhelming love for her and just knowing, like, this is the person that saved my life, right? This is the person that God gave me. Right. He gave me her, like, this is my mom. Right. And in that moment, that changed my relationship with my mom. You know, it was still a struggle because my mom, you know, my mom was addicted. My mom had her own challenges. Like, my mom was eating my pain medication. She was like eating these, like, I mean, she was taking my pain medication for herself to numb whatever emotional pain she had, that stuff that she had never got over. Right. So, you know, and I was still, you know, and I was drinking and I was praying and I was trying to walk and I was trying to rehabilitate. And, you know, it just took a while. It took a long time. I actually had to go from my mom's to a friend's house to having another surgery and to, you know, finally a friend's house where I could really, really heal and really kind of get back on track and start working out. And, you know, I remember the process of, like, just trying to feel better and work out. And, you know, I was going to the gym and, you know, I would go work out and, you know, you're trying to heal and you have all sorts of hardware in your body and you're hitting the weights. And I would come home and I'd be done. I'd be done for like 3 or 4 days, like where I was basically immobile. But the moment I felt better, I'd go hit the gym again. And, I still had to take medication during this time. Those 4 days turned into 3 days, the 3 days turned into, and before you knew it, I was working out all the time again, and I was praying, and I was asking the Lord to show me, like, and to help me and to guide me. And, you know, I didn't know what was next for me at all. I had no idea what was next for me, but I had an opportunity to heal. And through that process, I mean, there's so much that happens. I mean, we don't even have enough time to even explain. It's kind of like the book of Acts, right? Like, we're they're explaining all these miracles, and at the end of the day, they're saying, hey, there's just way too much to list, man, right? Like, Paul's like, yo, too much going on. You know, that's way too much reading for most of you guys. You guys can't even handle the word as it is, right? Like, this is too deep for you. So, but that's basically what happened. It's just that there were so many of these little miracles within these big miracles that continued to happen. And he just kept showing up and showing up and showing up. And eventually I pretty much got better. You know, I was praying to get me off the pain medication. Cause see, me as a man, like, I don't have that ability to just take myself off of drugs. Cause I like the feeling of being on those drugs, or like to quit drinking. And I kept reaching out to the Lord. I'm like, you figure that out. You help me out with that. I'm on board when you figure that out. I'm on board with you. But you know, over time, he did that. All of a sudden, like, I wasn't taking pain medication anymore, and I was working out, and I was getting big, and I was getting strong, and, you know, I was actually going to my doctor. My doctor looks at me, he's like, "What's going on with you?" I mean, to the point where he sent me to a psychologist because he wanted to know what was going on with me, right? Yeah, because he saw. It's insane. He sent me to a Stanford psychologist because they needed to figure out what was going on with me. Because when I went into the hospital, I was 215 pounds of just solid, like, looked like a WWF wrestler. Like, I was just this big, strong dude. And within 3 weeks, I had atrophied so bad that I got down to about 165 pounds, 160 pounds. So in 3 weeks, I had just, my body had eaten itself alive. And throughout this process that I kept seeing my neurosurgeon, you know, he's seeing me put on muscle. He's like, this doesn't make sense, right? You know, and I actually started talking to he was a Jewish neurosurgeon. We were talking about Jesus, like, and his perspective was a little different than my perspective, which is all good. But, like, he's just like, this kid is nuts, right? Like, what's going on with this dude? And this doesn't make sense. And so he ends up sending me off to a psychologist to try to figure out what's going on. I mean, and I think maybe they wanted to figure out if I was on some kind of steroid and doing some illegal. I don't know. I can't exactly tell you what it was. But over the process, I just kept getting bigger and stronger and healthier. And I started eating a lot better because I knew that the nutrition was going to help me with it. And I just kept praying and giving it to God all the time. And before you know it, like, you know, I think it was like, 5 years after my broken back, I'm on my last final pain medication. When I was like six, I was like six deep. I had a plethora of pain medication I was taking. And I'm finally down to my last one. And, you know, I knew that God wanted me in the world. And I know that he wanted me sharing my story. And I knew that he wanted to do that through fitness. So I ended up getting a job as a personal trainer at a brand new club that had just opened. And, you know, I'm very thankful for that job because that job is where I met my future wife. And,
wow. It's almost like a story of Samson. As I'm listening to you, he can't help because Samson, you know, big, you know, because he was big and he had a Lord over him. And then he, you know, he abused what God gave him. And then when he allowed.
For sure.
Yeah. I'm honest with you. There's a lot of parallel between you and Samson right now.
I hear it. I think Samson benched a little bit more than me. I think his squat was a little bit stronger than mine. But that's
they
cool.
Didn't have the
and I'm not into the I'm not into the long hair either. That's just not my thing. Like, he can have that. Samson can have that. But you know, I'm sure there are great similarities. I'm sure that I have great similarities to King David and just having a heart for the Lord and you know, Philip being such a great evangelist, like, I feel like I feel like Peter, you know, feel like I'm a knucklehead that just runs his mouth when he shouldn't run his mouth, right? And, it's, but thank you for the compliment. Like, I'll take Samson because he's a swole character. I'll take it, you know?
Well, you know, I just think, you know, I remember one pastor said some time ago, he said, you know, history, or I don't know if it was a pastor or someone, but basically he said history is just old things happening to new people. And in different
right.
ways, in different,
history repeats itself.
Different ways. Yeah. yeah, but it's pretty much, people
yeah.
do the same thing all the time. And then the Lord constantly
right.
brings us out of it. And you say, here,
right.
you got this weight, and God has brought you all this, then you meet your future wife, which I find extremely significant because you have
right.
relationships with women,
yeah.
but now you meet the woman who's
right.
going to be your wife. You know, as much as you want,
right.
we're getting a little bit over time, but it's okay. I just want to, you know, let the Lord use
okay.
testimony. You can be as transparent as you like how that was
yeah.
meeting your future wife.
Well, you know, right away I knew she was my future wife. I think that's the crazy part. You know, her and I were working for this gym. So I had a friend who got me that job. He was really, really generous guy. And he, turns out that my wife-to-be's roommate was my new manager. So Alyssa is my wife's name.
Mm-hmm.
Her friend said, hey, Alyssa, I want you to train with my new trainer. Tell me what he's all about. Tell me if you like his style, whatever, you know, whatever you're doing. You're assessing the trainer is what you're doing. And, yeah, we hit it off pretty well. You know, it was really crazy because when I look at Alyssa, this is just where I was in my life. I don't know whatever the Lord put on my heart, but just from the few days that I spent with her, I was like, man, this woman would make an amazing wife, an incredible mother, which those two things have happened.
Babies.
Yeah, right? And I was just like,
babies. There's a picture of it too on our link.
Oh, man, my son is absolutely like, man, I thought I was gorgeous. This kid smokes me. This kid owns me, right? This guy, he shuts me down. I'm nothing. I am. But like, I met my wife, and you know, we hit it off. And the crazy thing was, it's like for the first time in my life, I felt like I could be open with her. Well, you know, I had a hard time being open with anybody or honest, completely honest with myself or other people, But, you know, it was strange. But it was great because I knew that it was from the Lord. And you know, we dated for about a year. We were engaged mm-hmm. for about a year. And then we ended up getting married on 3/16. You know, we got married to honor the Lord, you know, with our
Amen.
Relationship, you know, for God so loved the world. Right, so we got married on 3/16. We took communion together at our wedding. We actually got baptized the night before. I'd already been baptized, but like, you know, my wife, she prayed for a Christian. It's funny, her story is like, I prayed for a Christian. I was like, yeah, you don't know what you're getting into when you pray for a Christian. Like, it's a whole different life, right? Like, it comes with this whole set of different issues, right? Like, it's
mm-hmm.
different. But yes, but we end up getting baptized the night before, and I mean, it's just been a very intense run. Like, you know, and marriage is marriage. Like, it has its highs and it has its lows. But, you know, the thing is, it's just like God's in the midst of all of it. And then in the midst of being all that, like, we, you know, we really wanted our first child to be a boy, you know, just to knock the first one out to be a boy so that if we have a girl, you know, you can have the protective older brother, you know, because, you know,
mm-hmm.
you're living that dream in your head, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, it was crazy. You know, my wife got pregnant and we were at the ultrasound and all of a sudden that small still voice comes to me and says, it's a boy. Cause you had no idea at this point, it was too premature in the
mm-hmm.
process.
Mm-hmm.
And, I told my wife, I said, God just told me it was a boy. And we had full confidence the whole time before we got the results that we were having a boy. And we named our boy Caleb. You know, Caleb mm-hmm. was, you know, one of the two from the original tribe that made it to the promised
yep.
land, right?
Amen.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, if anything, my boy's going to make it to the promised land. You know, we're going to raise him up in the Lord, and he's going to make it to the promised land, and he's going to lead other people with him to do so. And no pressure, Caleb, none. No pressure
no.
on anybody.
Not at all.
Right? But God's going to help you, buddy. If you ever listen to this, God's going to help you. But yeah, you know, my wife and I have really tried to honor the Lord in all this, you know, in our relationship, and it's been, you know, it's been a beautiful story. You know, I was asked on a podcast a while ago, you know, what would you tell your 20-year-old self, or what would you change? What would you do different? And the reality is nothing, absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I would have done different because it's these experiences that I got to be a part of that allowed me to develop the relationship that I have with God. You know, my relationship with him is extremely deep, and it's extremely powerful, and it's really faith-based, right, because of my mm-hmm. experiences with him. And not everyone's had those experiences. I'm very fortunate for those experiences. So, you know, there's nothing I would ever take back. And you know, my life is just so amazing, and I look forward to raising my son and what's in store for my wife and I. And, you know, to see what things like this, like how many people are going to be touched by this God story. Because at the end of the day, it's really his story. I'm just kind of like, I'm there. He used me. You know, it's mm-hmm. not about Rob Decker. It's about the Lord. And I hope that this story and these opportunities get used mightily for his purpose and his kingdom, so that, you know, there are people in this dark, hopeless world that have light in their heart and they realize that there is hope and that God is 100% real and that he's got their back. If just turn your eyes over to him, right? Be Peter on the water. Keep your eyes on him and you will not drown. I promise that. That's just, it's what he does. Every time I take my eyes off, I start drowning. But he'll keep you out of water. You know, he'll just keep your eyes on him. So I'm just really excited for all these opportunities, and I'm really, really grateful for you allowing me on the show for people to hear my story. And, you know, it's funny, every time I tell my story, it seems like I'm never telling the same scripted story. It's just whatever comes up is what comes up, and however I tell it is how I tell it.
Well, it's fascinating, to be frank, because you would not have seen yourself here, and you would not have seen yourself, like when you look back, life was supposed to be the way you thought it was. It was going to end when you jumped out the window. That's when it was going to end.
Right.
That was it. That was, you know, the end. You know, I'm an author, obviously. So the end, you know. But God says, I write the end, not you. And so I love that God is just so prevalent in your testimony. That's why I was just making much sure that your testimony gets out. I didn't want to put too much of, because I can talk a mile a minute, Rob. I can talk.
Yeah,
like,
for sure. That's two of us. That's two of us, for sure.
But, you know, I love the hope that's in your story, that through the bad times, God was ever with you, and he is continuing to be with you, and he's going to take you on this journey, and that he used what we call that still, small voice to speak to you, and these experiences, everything spoke to you. So what I want to do is have people have an opportunity to connect with you online. So go ahead and let us know what your social media outlets are.
Well, I just want to let everyone know, thank you for listening, and I really hope that my story has touched your hearts. And if you know anybody that could, you know, use this, I direct them to Parker and myself. And I currently, or just recently, started my own web page. It's called robdeckerspeaks.com. You know, right now it's very immature, and I'm putting material on there, but you'll get the CBN video, and there's an article that was written about me by South Bay Health Magazine, where I live, where they shared my story as well. And every time I get on a podcast or the radio, I'm going to, you know, attach stuff there, and we'll see what God does with it and see how it grows. But you can go on that website. You can email me at rob@robspeaks.com. Rob Decker speaks.com. Sorry about that. And you can always email me there. I am on Facebook under Rob Decker and on Instagram as well. So, you know, you can always follow me, instant message me, email me, you know, with whatever. You know, ultimately my heart is to give people what I call a dose of hope. If I can just give people a dose, you know, this is coming from a guy who was heavily into drugs and alcohol, and it was all about the dose, right? So if I can flip it around for the good, it's going to be like, I really hope that I can give people a dose of hope. So, yeah, you can reach me. Those are great avenues to go down and reach me at.
Rob, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us on the show. I really enjoyed you sharing your testimony, and I felt, as I was listening to you, I just felt the hope of your story just flowing into me and just flowing into my life, and I hope others felt that as well as they listened. And so what I want to do is always invite you back when you have time. I'd love to invite you back and talk some more, because I know you have a lot of wisdom, especially to those who deal with addictions, those of us who deal with, like for me, you know, I've lost a lot of weight, last year, don't get me wrong, but, you know, trying to stay on the course of, you know, eating right, trying to do faith and fitness as well. And so
cookies are from the devil,
hey,
I'm telling you. Cookies are from the devil.
I know.
The devil made cookies. The devil made those cookies.
I promise you. I promise you. You know, and so, you know, everyone has their own addictions, I guess. And so, to have you back real soon, so we'll talk offline and we'll talk about that, but just, you know, thank you again for being with us on the show today.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you, just thank you for letting me be on the show, and I look forward to whatever things that we can do together in the future that are going to help change the minds and hearts of the hurt and broken out there. Just want to do God's work, that's it. Thank you.
And we were talking today to Rob Decker. You can find out more information at his website, robdeckerspeaks.com. It is under construction. There's still stuff for you to look and view at, but he is building the website as it goes. So always check back for new content. And then you can also email him at rob@robdeckerspeaks.com. Make sure you let him know if you need him to speak to your group, you need him to speak to your small group. He wants to help out and bring the story of what God has done for him to you. I hope you've been inspired. I hope you've been uplifted. I hope if you're feeling sad that the Lord has used Rob's story to make you glad. One of the things that Rob said that I love, he said that the easy choice is not always the wisest way. And the easy way is not always the wisest choice. And the reason why is because just because it's easy doesn't mean that it's right. And he's gone through a lot of difficult times. But when he was asked, what would you tell your 20-year-old self? What would you change? He said, nothing. Because I am here where God has me here. That those difficulties that we deal with, God has not left us. God has not forsaken us. He said, I will be with you always, even to the end of the age. And so if you have Christ in your life, you are not alone. Even if you feel alone, you are not alone. And this really resonates with me. So I hope that those of you out here who are listening in, be comforted. Be comforted by his story. Be comforted by the fact that God will never leave you. Thank you so much for joining for this edition of the Parker J. Cole Show. You have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day. And God bless.